It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning here in Phoenix, Arizona. We're having a nice hot day. It is hot. It's getting ready to get hot. You know, the inside hot. You know, can't keep your DVDs in the car hot. That kind of hot. No pets in the car hot. We're starting to get hot. But that means it's boating season. You get to go to the lake. You know, one thing that I always reminded of whenever it starts getting hot like this is when it was my wife and I were married in August of 84. Got that right. 11th of August, 84, 1:30 p.m. a good friend of mine, that was my best man at my wedding, Russ Hayes, and he was one of my best friends in high school. And his wife, Christina, and I and Donna, we used to, you know, every week, you know, Saturday night for a long time, we would, you know, while they lived here, they moved to South Carolina, but we used to go to dinner. We'd go to our favorite Mexican restaurant and go see a movie and buy one lottery ticket. And we'd just, you know, entertainment on the night. They drew the lottery. Yeah, we'd win. So we just buy one, you know, $1 thing just for grins and giggles. But I remember him saying something one time. It just stuck with me. We had both just started our own businesses. We were, you know, developing everything. I mean, you know, back in the day before computers, you had to have graphic artists and you do the artwork and, you know, terms like rubylith and paste, cut and paste actually meant cutting and pasting and you build a letterhead and artwork and business cards and you start doing marketing and you go out and then you start making money and you got all these costs and you go and all of a sudden you're going to an accountant and you go to the accountant and you're like, here's all my stuff and they do your taxes and everything and you start going, who in the heck am I working for? We're in our 20s, busting butt, living the American dream. It wasn't like that, and we knew it wasn't like that even when we were younger and our parents had businesses. You know, my father and mother are always running something. And I remember it just not being that. As a young man, I was really closely involved with the family's finance, you know, because you couldn't get away from my dad telling you about it anyway. And the same as my kids are now. When we had our restaurant and everything, they were, you know, intimately involved in everything. My youngest daughter, Sierra, I mean, that was her homeschooling for sixth grade, was learning, you know, you're going to learn the restaurant business and managing everything. So I was kind of aware of what to expect. When we started running our own businesses in the late 80s, mid 80s, and to the late 80s, and you're going, tax law changed a lot. I mean, there's all kinds of changes, how much they could get from you. And finally, as for the first time, we're making, you know, substantial amounts of money compared to, you know, our peers at the time. We were like, hey, man, we got some money. We got to buy houses and stuff. Then we go to the tax man. I was shocked. And the accountant for my friend Russ said, he goes, he was complaining and he's telling me the story. And he's talking to him about how could this be? And the tax man said, it's not going to change until the people can't take their boat to the lake. When you can't take the boat to the lake, in the desert heat here in Arizona, you're going to see something change. And I always remembered that. When we come back, I'll tell you what he meant. You stay right there. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
Those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Don't stop believing. Here, you know what I'm doing right now. I want to get to push the button. There it goes. Okay, we're putting it up on Freedom's Phoenix right now about the new space race that's going. We'll get to that in a second. I promised I'd finish you my story, but this is, you know, all of a sudden it's New York Times. It's there's space stations out there and private people. What the heck just happened? Well, if you didn't listen to this show, you would, well, what the heck just happened? But, you know, this stuff is going on all of a sudden now. The New York Times is, oh, it's not the news. It's the olds. It's spin on the news. It's suppression of the news. It's not about what you print. It's about what you don't print. You know, I've learned this a long time ago. These guys are killing me. You know, so I just want to make sure you guys know what's up. So we'll go ahead and talk about that in a second. I wanted to finish a story kind of, you know, where my mind's at today. My best friend in high school, best man at my wedding, he and his wife, we were young people in our 20s, opening businesses, starting to do, you know, I don't know, well. I mean, it was a struggle. It's always hard, but we were willing to make the sacrifice to give ourselves an opportunity. We're raising family. We wanted to have, you know, things and do stuff. And we worked very, very, very hard. I mean, you know, it's 12, 15-hour days, and we used to think that was rough until it got into longer when you got a restaurant, we worked hard, and then we wind up going to the accountant. And my friend, he's talking to his accountant, which was, you know, by our standards, I don't know, he could have been 40s, 50s, he was ancient as far as we're concerned, you're in your 20s, you know. And he looked at us and he's like, man, kids, you just don't get it. It's going to get worse too. And he told Russ, he said, it's not going to change. I mean, we're thinking, Rev, a freaking Lucian. Are you kidding me? People, it wasn't like they just changed and they did this and they added that and they're doing, and then all of a sudden, Daddy Bush, read my lips, no new taxes. Yay. And then he raises taxes. And it just, I mean, of course we're going to freaking, you know, I don't know what, you know, change, you know, no credibility that we give to the government. They're not there to protect us. They're there to steal from us. I mean, it's like legalized theft with a shiny tie. You know, a badge and the always available gun. Of course, they got all their little parchment, raised, sealed, stamped papers and clipboards and stuff, but it doesn't matter. They're going to do it. They've done it. So we're sitting there talking. He said, Ernie, you know, he told me something. Because young 20-something-year-olds, we don't have any perspective. I mean, we don't have any experience to draw upon. There's no metaphor you can give that we really, you know, viscerally understand. So he goes, he said, when people can't take their boats to the lake anymore, that's when you'll see the beginnings of the revolution. And we're like, what the heck does that have to do with anything? And now as you get older, you start to understand more. And he explained it. And what he was saying was, is that as hard as people work, they're willing to work. You know, the human condition is such that, man, they'll put up with a whole bunch of pain to get some pleasure. I mean, think of a teenage boy at 17 to 19, how many, you know, miles of broken glass will he, you know, crawl over, you know, scoot on his butt, you know, just for the promise of maybe kind of getting a date with the, you know, the cute little girl sitting down at the end of, you know, in the corner of the classroom. I mean, you know, especially if you're a man, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, it is amazing the amount of gymnastics in your head and with your body, whatever, that you'll go through to get whatever it is that you want, especially when it comes to the sex drive or something, you know, attracting another mate. How many jobs will you work to get that, you know, that car, that goodie, that stuff, that apartment, that, you know, whatever? How much energy will you put into having a loving relationship, to be able to love someone that loves you? How much effort do you go through to do that? I mean, it's a lot. And then when you start having children, you know, you got all kinds of more justification to work hard. But then you find out there's somebody else, you know, that's got a leash around your neck, and they keep increasing the pressure. You know, they keep directing where you go and what you do and what cut they get out of it. You'll go through an enormous amount of pain to get to the weekend. Thank God it's Friday. I'm working for the weekend. I don't know that song, how it goes. But the so that's what he was saying. He's going, when you get to, it's Saturday and Sunday, and all of a sudden, I'm sorry, you got to work on Saturday too, just to survive. You and your family, your wife, maybe even your kids. Do you get Sunday off? Maybe you don't even get Sunday off. Maybe you're so tired on Sunday, you need that just to get caught up so that you can go another week. What happens when you can't afford the gasoline for your boat? They start charging, oh, you got to get a certain kind of insurance and permits, and they're cruising the lakes to give you tickets for you're having too much fun without a permit. These are the things that, you know, really great on humans. They will go through an enormous amount of toil and effort for a perceived reward. They'll allow all kinds of stuff to happen for perceived reward. They'll endure the greatest, most horrendous pain for perceived reward. So I, as I get older, I started to understand. And last year, my sons and I, we bought this, you know, little $1,500 boat. I mean, it's a little piece of crap, and we just keep working on it when we can and so on. And it's a cool little thing. It'll sit like six. It's a 16.5-foot little Sea Ray. You know, it doesn't strain the car. It's not like I got to get a diesel to pull it around or anything. We just, you know, we got like 30 miles. We go up to the lake. Yeah, there's a lot of lakes here in Arizona. You didn't know that, did you? Do you know there's more boats per capita in Arizona than any state in the union, including Florida? See my point? I mean, here it's hot, man. Desert hot, 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 hot. You know what? That means we get to go to the lake. So we enjoy ourselves. You know, the going to the lake, tubing down the river, oh, that's a big thing here in Arizona. You know, we enjoy our water sports. But when it gets to the point that no matter how much you toil, no matter how much you've worked over the years, and you're having to sell all your toys, I mean, you can see it. You go Craigslist, and I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And you knew it was going to happen. I remember when this happened in the early 90s after the SNL scandal and all that stuff was going on, the savings and loan thing and the Lincoln Thrift and, you know, Charles Keating and the Keating 5 senator thing and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I remember all that here in the Valley and the same kind of thing, but this is much worse. People would sell their toys. Now, I got to eat, man. You know, this Wave Runner ain't doing me any good. This quad, this motorcycle, this whatever. And the toys have gotten way more sophisticated than back then, too. I mean, dang. Used to be these little three-wheel ATVs, death traps anyway. So I've seen this before, and it started. You know, my wife, you know, she just cruises Craigslist all the time because she can. I don't know, whatever. Some good stuff on there. And looking for a home for our son, daughter-in-law, they're still looking. They're still making offers. They're still, you know, that's another thing. You know, they're not, I told them, they're going, oh, no, it'll take a month or two or three. You know, they do short sales or bank-owned, whatever it takes. I said, don't expect them to do anything until July. It's like in, you know, February, March, April. I'm going, they're not going to do anything until July. Why? Because their balance sheet shows all these homes at an X amount of dollars. And if they start liquidating, they start selling them for half what they were on their books for, then they got to recalculate all the other homes in the same category, same neighborhood, same type, same square footage, same whatever, same development, same exactly the same next door, whatever. They got to revalue every single one of those in their spreadsheet. They go broke. They're done. It's already, see, this is why I keep saying it's not a gonna happen thing. It's an already happened thing. This is done, already done. Okay? So you got to prepare yourself for this. As this starts to wind down, then you start flooding the market with toys. Now, here comes that one cool camping trailer with a pull-out ATV rack carrying go my house on the Lone Prairie weekend, five-minute setup, breakdown, go home, backyard store, trailer camping, kids love it thing. Okay? These trailers that they have, I mean, they just mass-produce these, and they're just everywhere. You have these used car lots, you know, pawn shops. I mean, they're just everywhere. Craigslist, you know, full. I mean, and they're still not bringing them down low enough to where they're going to be able to sell them. That'll come later. Now, that'll come before Christmas. Because the summer, you know, is now when they have all, you know, yeah, you want to get them now. You know, all the boat repair shops, you know, they're filled up. They're 3 weeks to, you know, have your stuff worked on, or they're, you know, whatever. It's busy. We're getting it all taken care of so we can sell it and so on. And then after the summer, you're not going to want summer for winter. That's when the price is going to start plummeting. Christmas isn't going to give them what they wanted. We are in the beginnings, or well into a depression. You think the people in 1931, 32 knew they were in a depression? I know. We'll talk about it.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, what's that mission? Aaron Clay, your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, we take on Superman's role. The truth, justice, and what used to be the American way. And I know somebody's got to do it. You know, I'm, you know, dang. You know, do you think that the people in 1930s knew that they were in a depression and how long it would last? And where did they get their information from? How did they know? You know, they called, you know, Hearst newspapers or something. You know, if you don't say the right thing, you know, you wind up going to Poland. Just ask Kellen Thomas. we're going to wait and see how that one plays out. Donna goes, you should get Helen on. I'm going, you know how long that list is? And everybody can absolutely sure she's definitely not going to come on this show. So we'll make the attempt, you know, when the time comes. But it's I know how this plays out. I've seen it before. You know, you have one of the tried and true, the people that, you know, are respected in the media, and they start saying something negative about Israel, man, you're getting shipped off somewhere. Now, that's just, oh, heck no. That is just so not going to happen. So we'll get all studied up on that after the dust settles. We found out who did what, where, when, why, how, and if she survives another month or so. And she's already retracting big time. I mean, she's like, oh no, didn't mean it. And all she said was on some video blog, somebody caught her saying, you know, asking about Palestine. So, yeah, just tell the Israelis to go home. Just get out of Palestine. It's not theirs anyway. Go back to Germany, Poland, whatever. Just get, you know, it wasn't yours. You took it and what. And, you know, she's not the only one, you know, saying that kind of stuff. But to have somebody that sits dead center front row at the White House to be saying that, oh, heck no. And then they had Ari Fleischer, which was it? He was press secretary under Bush or something, and he was up there going, "Oh, I'm appalled." I mean, he was saying all the, you know, it's like the bullet point 3x5 card stuff, and they had it on some YouTube and something. I was watching. We put it up on Freedom's Phoenix, and I watched it for about, I don't know, 23 seconds or something, if that. And I get it. I've seen this before. Next, I just don't subject my mind to pollution when I already know what they're going to say and why. You know, I don't subject my mind to a lot of stuff, and that's why I count on you guys. If it wasn't for the readers and the editors on Freedom's Phoenix, you know, my radar screen would be relatively narrow, as would all of ours. You know, a good friend of mine, one of our financial supporters, he. You get your financial supporter, you get to have a say. That's just the way it works. And I love all of them. They're just so smart, and they just so know better, and they like what we're doing. And we were talking about it at breakfast one time. I'm going, you know, I don't get it. I mean, I really, really don't understand. There's so much information out there. They see it, but it's ignored or something. He goes, you do the same thing. And I go, really? You know, explain it. And he goes, when we look at the front page of, say, the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or something, or, you know, Time Magazine's cover, or they put up something, you know, big problem, government to the rescue. I mean, you just, do you read that? No. And he goes, they're doing the same thing. They go, big problem. Government's the problem. They don't read it because they look for government as the solution. He goes, you do the same thing. You just discount stuff. You don't get the information that good or bad. You don't have a, and if you don't have enough foundation, enough information to be able to discern what is and is not BS, you know, you just, you don't get the advantage of having more data, even though it's spun off into whatever and so on. But I recognized that enough early on that that's why we set Freedom's Phoenix up the way we did. Everybody gets to have their say. It is raging on Freedom's Phoenix right now. Is it right for Israel to blockade Gaza? You know, should Gaza be allowed to even exist? Should they be able to take ships of supplies? Should they be able to, you know, and should Israel kick them out, starve them out? Should they be able to fight back with what? You know, yada, yada. I haven't read it. You know, I say it on this show a lot. Am I allowed not to care? Now, last week we had Stephen Lebman on. He's been writing a lot about this in support of the indigenous people there, the Palestinians or whatever, for generally they just had it taken. So he's taken their side. And, you know, so I'm like, all right, tell me the spiel, man. And this is the only thing that I wanted to know. what is it that Israel wants? And this is Zionist political movement, because it's not a religious thing. It's just like, yeah, we're going to take it because we can. We got guns. And we made alliances with other governments, and, you know, they gave us foreign aid, and we used a culled off a cut of that to buy congressmen and prime ministers and, you know, members of parliament and all this other, and we do whatever, we're good. So, you know, I understand the dynamics of it. It's been like that throughout human history and all kinds of stuff. This is nothing new. And to think that this wouldn't happen is just to be naive and not know anything about history. But my thing is, I'm going, what is enough? I mean, what is, I mean, if the, you know, the Bible doesn't say, you know, America is Israel or something. I mean, is there some line in there? My, you know, foreign flock daylight. Yep. Yeah, we get them too. I mean, so, you know, where does it stop? So I just want to know, what is it that they want that if they got it, would that be it? Can I keep my tax money then? Do I have to keep funding them? You know, I'm just wondering, is it enough enough? I mean, where is it? What is the line? I don't know. But on Freedom's Phoenix, both sides are allowed to discuss it ad nauseum. Let it go, let it go, let it go. That's what provides us a wider radar screen of all the issues. So all the concerns about why I do that, there's a reason. Talk about it more when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
No, and he be a coming. You know, there's no getting around that. And do you think people at the time knew what was coming during the Depression? And where did they get their information from? You know, if you look at in history who these people were that controlled it, I mean, it was very easy. I mean, you had a newspaper, and they just started doing radio and the fireside chat thing with FDR. And all, I mean, it was people, there would be tens of millions of people that would listen to individual talk show hosts. Beat the crap out of Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, all these guys. They, you know, they pale Instagram. They had such a hold on the public mind. It was scary. A lot of them would be, you know, religious people, you know, entertainers. You get the Billy Graham types out there, man, giving it what for. They would create entire movements, you know, even political movements. It got so bad that there was a lot of, because it was so concentrated in the hands of a few, that the religious community kind of shunned politics. Right up until, oh, I would say until the born-again Christian thing of Reagan's race in 80. Until that time, you know, it was, you're not, man, you don't want to, don't be bringing politics into church. You know, that's just not where, you know, we're much higher than that. And then that changed, didn't it? Well, one of the reasons was it was a backlash from when politics got way too into politics and the use of mob rule and democracy and all this other stuff because of radio. When radio first started, and you know, not everybody and their grandma had a radio station. It's not like it is now to where you could broadcast your thoughts on just the internet. You could do a podcast. You know, we don't have to be on the radio stations and everything that we are. I mean, of course, you know, you don't have as large an audience. You don't have a lot of people coming in. You don't have, you know, a dial in your car that you could just punch up and there they are. You know, it's nice that you're able to, you know, get me on the radio, or you can tell friends in your neighborhood on where we're broadcast on Terran Radio, I call it, Earth Radio, you know, and say, hey, you know, did you hear and you can put a billboard up. You know, we've done that here in the Valley when I was on here in Arizona. We put billboards up and so on and declare your independence. And, you know, you get, you know, new listeners, and I keep it pretty, you know, not a lot of dead air. So once they get in there, okay, I give the guy a shot another time on another day. Okay, I'll listen. Okay, dang it. You know, he's saying stuff I'm not hearing anywhere else. So I know how this works. The thing is that, you know, now you have just pockets of communities that have overlapping messages that, you know, appeal to different demographics. I'll give you an example. You have small freedom-oriented community radio that pirate signal coming out of a dorm room at Arizona State University that we gave them the FM transmitter, by the way. But they, you know, they have this coming out. They got, what, a few thousand? You know, anybody with their little shuttle iPod push it FM radio whippy running around jogging armband earphone thing? You know, and they see a sign that says 91.7, you know, just do, okay, beep, 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 and they're getting a loop of whatever. Or maybe a live DJ, a host that's just on campus. How impactful can that be? You know, what happens when you get a dozen, 200, 2,000 people that listen to whatever it is that you have to say in one area about issues that affect you right then, right there? And how they may dovetail into something else. Maybe you got, you know, the president coming to speak at your university. This ability to disseminate information is what really has the bad guys concerned. This cannot be allowed to continue in this form. And it gets to where it's so obvious what happens, because it always happens throughout history. Sooner or later, you're not allowed to complain. You're not allowed to dissent. You're not allowed to criticize, because they become so bad and it becomes so obvious and it becomes so well documented and it becomes so obvious to everyone else, and the research is available to anyone that just, you know, brushes up against, they had a problem. They go, look, what the heck is this? Really? Wow, man, it's that big. This always happens, and it gets more and more like a police state, because it is one. We have a gentleman in the East Valley here in Arizona that was being critical of the police. And he was getting a lot of information from police. You know, they're putting up different things that were going, oh, his house gets raided. They'll come up with something. Confiscate all the computers, take everything, and then we go to trial. So I you know, for me to target specific things or individuals, it's rare that I would do that. It's, and it's only if they get caught up in the issue that we're doing, because I know the benefit of the information we get just by engaging the issues on our own, having a say, injecting into the matrix what it is that we want to talk about. And we'll keep hammering on this this immigration thing, not because it has anything to do with immigration. It's a Trojan horse. You know, people will start to realize, a lot of people start to fear it. You know, they want to have something taken care of on the immigrant. We need to, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they're missing the whole point. It's the welfare state. That's the problem. That's what creates all the problems. You do away with the welfare state, you have any, you know, all the social and economic welfare and subsidies and all this other crap. You know, all of a sudden you have this vibrant economy. You're begging for workers from freaking Philippines and China to be able to help you make all your stuff and keep prices down, and you can enjoy a higher standard of living, don't have to mow your lawn no more. I mean, this is what happens. That's what happened. And then it changed. And we got to blame somebody. And the people screaming the loudest, look over there, they're the ones to blame, are almost every time the ones that did it. You know, it's so knowing this, going in, because I had allowed myself a wider radar screen to see what was going on in perspective of everybody, and it's not even that I agree with them. It's just that I get the, you know, different perspective. I can see more clearly what's going on. You know, there was a business tape series that some of my clients back, one of my businesses that I had back in the day, they would listen to these cassette tapes they'd get in the mail. And then when they got done with them, they just, you know, let me listen to them, or I'd listen to them while I was, you know, doing some work or something like that. And they were just business things. I remember this one thing. There's a couple of things. One, the answer is always yes. And they gave an example of there was a person, they were building computers. They had a big, giant order, and they had to have it done within a week or whatever. And the entire computer, my kingdom for a horseshoe nail. I mean, there was this one little component that they needed to finish this big, giant order. All this hardware was going to cost them a gazillion dollars because of this one 15-cent item they couldn't get enough of to finish out the production line or whatever. So they call these providers and they say, look, we got to have this. We need more. We need it like tomorrow. We need, you know, what is it going? And everybody was saying, well, no, we just can't do it. I mean, you know, we just can't do it. We're not going to be able to help you. Life sucks. The point they were making is yes is always the answer. Well, they go to one provider and he goes, well, yeah, let me get back to you. You know, give me a couple hours, you know, check it out. I'll get it all taken care of. So he goes back and he says, all right, what if we went overtime? What if we brought in some more help here? What if we, you know, got our component from this and paid extra for it and this, and this 15-cent thing cost, $23 a piece or something to get it? Yes, I can do it, but it's going to cost this much. Then they make a decision. Is that what they would? Yes, you know, it's worth whatever. You know, make it go where? 92,000 of them at whatever cost. It may have cost them an extra thousands of dollars to get this to fulfill this contract. So the point that they were making in this exercise was that the answer is always, always yes. It's just how much. So anybody comes to me immediately. I mean, I just remember that from 20 years ago. I go, yes. The answer is always yes. Now, there may not be what you want and how fast or how much. Right? A good example. Yesterday, one of our sound board engineers is a guy. I mean, the guy that actually does all the little 15 billion wires underneath our control panels and everything and wire in this place. He is an engineer for radio that I've known in several radio stations I've been at. Charles and I both have used him, worked with him for a long time. In fact, he's the voice on some of the commercials that we have. And he has a friend that wrote a book about something. I don't even know. Don't even care. And he did a DVD presentation that he does to publishers and whatever he needed to have. It was important to him. He had to have 200 DVDs copied, like, you know, not later. So he came in yesterday, man. He told me you could save my butt. I need this to send. I got, and, you know, that, you know, the answer is yes. And what was the payment? He had to do it. It was fortunate. We have our intern was here, Topher, and we wanted to train him on how to use the DVD players. And I go, yeah, okay, you know, the DVD duplicators. And I'm going, you know, here's a good opportunity. And I go, all right, you know, come on in. Give me your stuff. This is how you load it into the blah, blah, blah. This is how you push the button. This, boom. You keep doing that till you got 200. Take you about, you know, an hour or less. So he sat in there. Boom. He got it done. He's off. He's happy as heck. Okay, paid me for blanks, gave me, you know, something, here's something, he's off. Happy as heck, saved his butt. Answer is yes, but what were the conditions? Well, he had to wait around for me to use the opportunity to train somebody. Then he had to do it himself because we were busy with other stuff. And he had to pay for what the cost it was plus a little something for the home team. Done. As opposed to, no, I can't. It's yes, I can, under whatever conditions that we have a mutually negotiated benefit to both of us. Done. So yes. Yes is always the answer. But, you know, there's another thing that I learned from that tape series. Of all the stuff, I think it was like two main things I got out of the hours that I've listened to this stuff. I always remember these two things. One, it's always yes. And the other one was indecision, worst decision description. And they're going on about how they have these intractable problems. You know, the board of directors are all freaking out. You got your business. You can't. You don't know what to do. There's nothing that presents itself. You're damned if you do. You're damned if you don't. You can't. And it just do something, anything. Indecision is the worst decision because why? Why is that? Why is that the worst? Why do you just shoot from the hip and you just, you know, there are people that get stuff done because they're just doing, even though it's a stupid, crazy, but they get it done. Why? This is where, you know, kind of my personality came in. Everything works. It's just how much, as long as you go by a principle. What are your principles? Well, you don't aggress. You don't lie, cheat, steal. So no matter what you do, no matter how crazy, wacko, whatever it is, at least, you know, you're heading in the right direction. You may not get the most bang for your buck. It probably would have been more effective to do something else. You know, that's not the point. The point is, as long as you're not violating, you know, principles that people respect you for, you know, and I choose libertarian principles, thou shalt not aggress, you know, so the non-aggression principle. So I, you know, everything else you can kind of, you know, play with and so on, but you keep base to your principles and you just make a decision. You do something. You do anything. You get the ball rolling. You get somebody's attention. You just do something. When you're in the most intractable position, you're most vulnerable. You have no money. You have no ability. You can't get. You're just stuck, and you just get deeper and deeper and deeper into your easy chair. You know, what do you think's going to happen? So you do something. Indecision, worst decision. But why? They made a really good example of this. They said, I remember the instructor, they would do his presentation or business things or whatever, seminars. And he was saying that the reason indecision is the worst decision is because you never change your perspective. It's like, I use examples sometimes to give you're standing in on the side of the road and you're off on the edge of the road and to your right, you know, and left there are telephone poles. There's these two telephone poles. And that's all you see. You look to your right, okay, telephone pole. Look to your left, telephone pole. I am hemmed in by telephone poles. I am bracketed by telephone pole. I got telephone poles to the left of me. I got telephone poles to the right of me. You know, and you don't know what's, you know, on the other side of it. You don't know if you just change your perspective, if you just make a decision, if you take one step forward or backward, if you just take a step, you'll see there's a freaking crap load of telephone poles that you never even knew were there because your perspective was so blinded by where you were that you didn't see what was really coming or what was available or what was there or what was behind it or what was holding it up or what was, you just didn't see it. It's like sitting there staring at an engine. You're working on the car. You can't figure, you know, and some guys that got some experience, what are they doing? They're going to the front. They're going to the side. They're lifting up wires. They're looking. They're shaking stuff. They're doing. Do they know what they're doing? Heck no. They're just, you know, just standing there. Ain't going to do anything. You know, so you look. You get under. Yeah, I got a problem with my Montero. This has been kind of a recurring problem. I love this Montero SUV. We've had it for years. It is cool. It's pretty. You know, it's white. You know, it's just, I like white. I got my Impala's white. You know, you don't have to deal with white. My dad taught me that. Get white cars. They last longer. They look nicer. So the Montero, it has like electrical things going on. There's some short in there somewhere. And I know that once I start getting in there, you know, instead of replacing the fuse all the time, it just shuts off. And unfortunately, it was just pulling into the valley after our long trip to St. Louis. My wife was behind me. She didn't even call me because she knew I had to race to make the afternoon radio show time. And fortunately, she had wherewithal to get it and boom, gum wrappers and boom, she's off. So there's this one little something, and I know I go in there. It's just, I don't even want to start making indecisions. Where I'm not deciding. You know, I got my son-in-law. He's kind of working on it, so on, but I know what's going to happen sooner or later. I'm going to have to go in there and start. What am I going to do? I have no idea. I've tried messing with this before. I got to get underneath, pull the wiring hard, start checking, running wires and doing kind of, you know, I'm not looking forward to that, but then it's getting hot. So sooner or later, I'm going to have to do that, and it's going to get the focus. And I'm going to just dive in and start making decisions and start, because it will provide a different perspective for me to find and analyze the problem, or at least what is not the problem. We are getting in a situation that we are going to be dumbfounded with indecision. We're going to have to start making decisions. It's going to get bad. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we're just going up against the wind. And sometimes you don't mind. I mean, you just need a little bracing on the face. You know, sometimes we get a little too comfortable. Sometimes we just need to, you know, stick our chest out and chin out and just, you know, bring it on, 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 bring it on. Because we're, you know, and that's where we're going. I am very... What's the word? Dismayed, saddened, worried, what's coming and how unprepared America is. I hope this radio station network, the show, prepared you a little bit and you're taking it seriously. And I try and keep it fun. I try and keep it light. Today I didn't schedule a guest because I wanted to talk to you and kind of prep you for some of the other stuff that's coming and give you some hope and direction that I think what's coming and how you deal with it, you know, it's up to you. I mean, you know, I don't know your circumstance because, you know, we have people that are elderly. You know, they have a fixed income that they count, you know, it's dollars that are coming in and costs keep going up. The distance between that keeps growing. You start maxing out credit cards. You stop being able to – there's no equity in your home to borrow against anymore. You can't do a reverse equity – a reverse mortgage on it because there's no equity to reverse on. You know, you can't sell it. Your pension, retirement funds, all the stuff that you were counting on is gone or it's not paying dividends anymore. You can't – if you liquidate it, then you're done. I mean, and then how much would you get anyway? And then where did you put it? So this is, you know, this is why we've really been focusing on, I mean, we make fun of it and everything, you know, but we, you know, got chickens, got a garden, because they're going to have some kind of something that you're going to be able to put in your mouth and swallow and keep you from being hungry and not die right away. You know, Soylent Green, it's people. I mean, you know, whatever they got to do, they're going to keep you fed. Yeah, because that you want to see a motivator. I mean, even more, you know, I don't know which would motivate a 17-year-old boy more, you know, not eating for a couple of days and giving him a hamburger or a pretty cheerleader. That sex drive is pretty high. But I'm telling you, you stop feeding 17-year-old boys, you know, that their mind begins to get diverted over to the food. So this is where we're going. So what do you do? I mean, it's like the old joke, you know, you can't outrun a bear. And you go, hey, man, I don't have to outrun the bear. I don't have to outrun him. I just have to outrun you. You know, that's where we're at. You know, it's going to be who can survive the longest. And let me tell you who's going to survive. Those prepared, those able to protect what they have set aside and stockpiled and prepared, and those that are willing to take it from those that aren't prepared to save it. You know, that's why it's always, you know, the roving Huns of whatever, the bands of, the hordes of. Then people band together in defense against that. They band together even more. They hire somebody that has skills to go after them, to protect them. It's the beginning of government. So the more that you are independent, the more that you are able to provide for yourself, protect what you've provided, and communicate with others, you know, what's going on there. The more autonomous you can be, the more independent you can be, the less dependent you are, the less you're begging for it. Somebody save me, protect me, rule me. And all they got to do is show you the fear of somebody coming after you. And then they'll have a guy in a white hat, which was the guy behind it the whole time, come up and say he's going to protect you. It's a protection racket. Get out of it.